Genesis chapter number 34. We are continuing in our study of the book of Genesis, and we come to Genesis 34. We're going to continue in our study of this chapter, and let me remind you of a few things that we noted last time, is that God is not mentioned in Genesis 34. And the truth is that God is absent from the life of Jacob at this point because Jacob has been making his own decisions. We know that he did not go to Bethel. He decided to pitch his tent towards Shechem there to a pagan people. And we find that there would be great consequences for that decision. But also there's a second thing that we noted in this chapter, and that is that Jacob is silent. He allows his son to take over. And we talked about last week about the ruin of parental indifference. And that's what we find here in the life of Jacob. The only time that we find him speaking is at the end of the chapter, after it's all said and done, after his sons completely did away with the men of Shechem. They killed all of the men. And then Jacob is basically fearful for his life. And at that point, he speaks up. And we ask ourselves the question there, well, where was Jacob all along? He was absent. Now, I want us to continue in the study. And I want to note something out in our text. And before we read the remainder of our text, I want to ask this question. Where are the mourners? Because we observe three people or three groups of people in this chapter. We have the sons of Jacob who would wreak havoc in the city of Shechem, who deceived the people of Shechem. We have Hamor and Shechem, those who were the leaders of the city there. And then we have Jacob at the end. And none of those, based upon all that we read in this text, not one person is mourning for the sin that is being done and committed in this chapter. Now, we pick up, if you would, in verse number 13. Genesis 34, verse 13. And the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, deceitfully, and said, because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. And they said unto them, we cannot do this thing to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for that were a reproach unto us. But in this will we consent unto you, if ye will be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised, then will we give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if ye will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then we will take our daughters, and we will be gone. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son, and the young man deferred not to do the thing, because he had delight in Jacob's daughter, and he was more honorable than all the house of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came unto the gate of this their city, and communed with the men of their city, saying, these men are peaceable with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land, and trade therein for the land. Behold, it is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us for wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only herein will the men consent unto us for to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us be circumcised as they were circumcised. Shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. And unto Hamor and unto Shechem his sons, his son hearkened all that went out of the gate of this city. And every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of his city. And it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brother, took each man his sword, and came upon the city boldly, and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house, and went out. And the sons of Jacob came upon the slain, and spoiled the city, because they had defiled their sister. They took their sheep and their oxen and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field and all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives took they captive and spoiled even all that was in the house. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, and here finally Jacob speaks, ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. And they said, should he deal with our sister as with an harlot? And that's how the chapter ends. But I want to ask the question again, where are the mourners? Now, upon hearing the news earlier in the chapter that Dinah, their sister, Jacob's son's sister, had been defiled by Shechem, the son of the prince of Shechem, we find that Jacob's sons were extremely upset. In verse 7, the Bible says, and the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved, and they were very wroth. And so we find here that the sons of Jacob are visibly upset here. Later we find that the word grieved here speaks of an internal pain. Something happened within them when they heard that news. The word wroth here speaks of something that was burning within them. It means a kindling or an inflaming. And so we find that they were angry. Later, when Jacob in Genesis 49 would give the patriarchal blessing to all of his sons, he spoke of Simeon and Levi to what they did here in Genesis 34. And he says, your brethren, your instruments of cruelty, and in their habitations, cursed be their anger, for it was fierce. And so we find here that we understand that the sons of Jacob are visibly angry. They're upset because of what has taken place. But the thing that we note here, their attack upon this sin was not a campaign for holiness. It was a campaign for revenge. And there's a difference there. Because at no point in this chapter do you find the sons of Jacob mourning over this sin that took place. Nor do you find the inhabitants of Shechem mourning over this sin. Neither do you find Jacob mourning over this sin. And so we ask ourselves the question here, where are the mourners? Now remember, as we read last week, Shechem and his father sought to make a deal after this was done based upon the reaction of the house of Jacob. They come and they commune with Jacob, but we know, we've noted already, that Jacob was basically silent until his sons came, and his sons are the ones who primarily respond to Shechem and Hamor. And in verse 9 through 12, we find them offering to make a deal with Jacob and his house. The people of Shechem, they offered their own daughters. They say, hey, you allow us to have your daughters, we'll offer our daughters to you. They offered them to be accepted in the land. They offered them to share the land with them. They offered Jacob the opportunity to trade with them. They offered gain in possessions. They say, we'll allow you to receive much possessions. They even offered Jacob any size dowry that he requested. In other words, at that time, when a man desired to marry a particular daughter, often a gift, a large gift, would be brought to the father and offered as a dowry. And here Shechem and his father basically tell Jacob, anything you want, we'll give it to you. And so that is the deal that is formulated there as they want this exchange to be made. But consider what they did not do. They did not confess their wrongdoing. As a matter of fact, at no point in the chapter do you find them feeling bad or feeling guilty for the sin that was committed when Shechem defiled Dinah, Jacob's daughter. Neither did they release Dinah. As a matter of fact, during this whole chapter, after we find Levi and Simeon go and they kill all the men in Shechem, you find that they took Dinah back with her. That means that Dinah was there all along. Not only had they defiled her, they had kept her from her family. And so that is important as we consider now, and I would like to note three things, or really those three groups of people. The first one we observe is, first of all, the sons of Jacob retaliated. The sons of Jacob retaliated, and as we read in our text, we find from verse 13 down to verse number 18, the sons of Jacob, and the Bible tells us right off the bat that they were not intending to be truthful. They were intending to be deceptive in verse 13. And the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, notice, the Bible says, deceitfully. So we see, as we mentioned previously, that it was Jacob's sons who were leading in this agreement. Their one requirement was that the men of Shechem be circumcised. But we notice several things about the sons of Jacob in this retaliation. First of all, we notice their deception. The sons of Jacob basically went back and forth with the people of Shechem, Hamor and his son, and they basically were deceptive. The sons of Jacob had no intention of giving their sister freely to Shechem. Their answer was deceitful. They had an ulterior motive in their conversation. What the sons of Jacob had in mind was not a marriage, was a massacre. That's what they had in mind. They were concerned, notice, not with grieving over sin and seeking to make restitution over this sin. What they had in mind was, how can we get back at them? So we see the deception. We also see the instruction that they give in verse 14 through 16. Their one request is this, that all the men be circumcised. And obviously here, they did not require just for Shechem to be circumcised as they were. They required for all the men to be circumcised. Obviously here, circumcision was a seal of the Abrahamic covenant. If you remember, we studied that earlier as we've been studying through the book of Genesis. It was a special sign between the nation of Israel, the people who would be the descendants of Abraham, and God. And so the sons of Jacob would use in this instruction something that is particular to them, and they would use that basically in their deception to trick those men into having a circumcision so that they could obviously kill all those men. But then we see that the extension of this request is that every male of you be circumcised. Now obviously at that point, Hamor and Shechem are so deceived because you would think that only the men who were not married in the city would be the one who needed to be circumcised. But no, they asked for all the men. That would include those who were married. And so you see here in their blindness, them being blinded by their sin, they're being deceived. They're being talked into something that will soon be their ruin. If the sons of Jacob were going to be successful in destroying the people of Shechem, then they had to be assured that all the men would be unable to defend themselves. But then we find in verse number 18, and their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. And so we find here that Hamor and Shechem were both completely deceived. Their sin deceived them. They were rejoicing in that which was going to slay them. And not only that, you would find that it is because of them being completely deceived that they are going to basically put all the men of their city to death. And so I want us to look at this first group. The first group is the sons of Jacob. They retaliated. You find no concern, no brokenness over their sin. The only thing you find in these young men is a desire to retaliate. But then we look at the second group, and that is the wicked rejoice. So here, Hamor and Shechem think, hey, we made a good deal. As a matter of fact, they go back to their people and they present, they lay out the case and they say how great this is going to be for all of them. And in verse 19, notice, and the young man deferred not to the thing, that means Shechem, because he had delight in Jacob's daughter and he was more honorable than all the house of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his sons, came unto the gate of their city. And we know that at that time, the gate of the city would be the place where announcements would be made, basically debates would take place. And so they come to the gate of the city and they commune with the men of their city. And this is what they say. And notice here, Jacob and his sons are not present, but here they have to kind of appeal to the men of Shechem to try to talk them into doing this. And so notice those words. These men are peaceable with us. Now that is the first deception, right? You'd find that actually they were not peaceable with them. Therefore let them dwell in the land and trade therein. For the land, behold, it is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us for wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only herein will the men consent unto us for to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised. So that's the bad news. But here, let's try to throw back some, another bait. Verse 33, shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. And so basically, they have to throw something out there to try to deceive those men. You see, they're so consumed with their sin. They defiled Dinah, Jacob's daughter. They're so engulfed in it that we know that we find that Shechem asked his father, you need to get her to me to wife. And we find that they finally have this agreement, and so they're consumed with that, that they're now, they're deceiving their own people. They've convinced the people that now all the cattle that are Jacob's would become theirs. And unto Hamor and unto Shechem, his sons hearkened all that went out of the gate of his city, and every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of his city. You know what that tells us here, as the wicked rejoice? They don't even know what they're doing. They don't even know that they've been deceived, and actually what they're agreeing to is going to be their death. You know, I think that often speaks of the society that we live in. You see, the society we live in promotes sin. They promote it so much that they deceive people in that promotion that actually much of those sins that are being promoted is actually to the detriment of society. But it's often brought on by people who are in leadership. And instead of having the people here in Shechem grieving over their sin, they're rejoicing over this. They're not mourning. So the sons of Jacob are retaliating. The wicked are rejoicing. But then there's a third group, and that is Jacob, the patriarch, is resentful. Notice, so the whole passage here from verse 25 down to verse number 29, we find that the sons of Jacob, basically after the third day, which would be the day where these men would be the sorest and the most unable to retaliate, and so they go on the third day, both Simeon and Levi, and they go in the city and they kill all the men. And not after that, after they come back from this great battle, they bring all their brothers with them. And all the brothers basically take all the spoils for themselves, and they bring it back home. And so Jacob hears about all that's taken place, and notice the response from Jacob in verse 30. And I believe here, this is what the problem is that we identified in Jacob's life last week, is that Jacob is totally absent until the end. God is not mentioned in this chapter, and Jacob is silent until he has to respond to the consequences of what's taken place. Verse 30. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, ye have troubled me to make me to sink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And I, being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me. And I shall be destroyed. I and my house. There's a lot of me's and I's in there, isn't there? And I want to say to Jacob, at no point do we find Jacob grieving over sin. Even at the end of all this, he's resentful about the whole thing. He's not mourning over the sin. You see, due to the circumcision, all the men of the city here were incapacitated. Two of the sons, Simeon and Levi, which were, by the way, Dinah's two brothers, in addition to Reuben and Judah, they only would be the ones that took part in the spoils. And then all the brothers came and took the things with them. Later on, when Jacob gives the patriarchal blessing, as we read earlier, we find that he refers to Simeon and Levi, and he says, you are instruments of cruelty, are in their habitations. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So what they did here, understand, the Bible doesn't record this chapter to condone it, because we know that it is condemned later. And Jacob, we find that the descendants of Simeon and Levi were indeed divided and scattered throughout Israel. Let me sum it up for you. We'll revisit that when we reach Genesis 49. Simeon and Levi did not have distinct territories in Canaan as they did, as other tribes did. Simeon was absorbed by the tribe of Judah, and then the Levites became the priestly tribe, and they basically dwelt throughout all Canaan instead of having their own tribal territory. And so because of what they did here, they would be divided and spread about. And so here now we look at Jacob and his reaction to what has just taken place, and I want to notice really four things about Jacob. First of all, we see that he was a selfish man. And I think that is pretty clear to establish as we read those verses, because Jacob's personal pronoun is used at least 8 times. Me, I, my. It's all about Jacob. Jacob was primarily concerned with himself. The character of the rebuke is very noticeable in Jacob's life. The patriarch looks at the matter solely from his own point of view. You see, Jacob was concerned about himself. They shall gather themselves together against me and slay me. You see, he was selfish. We see it in his concern. It was for himself. We see it in his complaint. Ye have troubled me. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Dinah has been troubled about this whole thing. The people of Shechem have been troubled about this whole thing. And you've been troubled? No, you haven't been troubled. You've been silent. You see, Jacob was not the one that was troubled. You see, you, Jacob, are the one that deceived your brother Esau. You remember, that's how it all started. He lied to his brother. He was going down to Sire with him, and he didn't go to Sire. You, Jacob, delayed your obedience in not going to Bethel and pitching your tent towards Shechem. You, Jacob, are the one who dwelt among a corrupt people. You see, Jacob, all of this trouble was brought on by yourself. So we see he was a selfish man. But also we see that he was a silent man. And we've made that point quite clearly. But it was only after the killing of all the men of Shechem that Jacob decided to rise up and say something. Up to this point, Jacob seems to be indifferent to the happenings around him. When we go back to verse number 5, the Bible told us there in verse 5, and Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah his daughter. Now his sons were with his cattle in the field. And Jacob held his peace until they were come. And you know, that's really telling about Jacob and his indifference as a parent and as the leader in the home, because he basically allowed his sons to take the torch here and to go ahead and make the decision, and he was silent. Jacob did not speak during the negotiations with Hamor and Shechem. It was only when Jacob was personally threatened that he decided to speak. Jacob did not evidence that the loss of Dinah's purity was as important to him as the loss of his physical protection. You see, Jacob is much like those who only complain of sin's problems if it seems to affect them personally. This is not genuine concern about evil. It is only a concern about selfish interest. So we see that he was a selfish man. He was a silent man. He was also a scared man. Verse 30, they shall gather themselves against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed. You know, that is really contradictory to what just happened. It was his son who killed all the men in one city, just 2 of his sons. Later, when we read in Genesis chapter 35 and verse 5, the Bible says, so Jacob came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan, that is Bethel, he and all the people that were with him. And we find that as we read, as they go on, we find that the people of Canaan actually feared because of what happened in Shechem. But we also see that he was a scorned man. His sons, as Jacob is upset about the whole matter, his sons come to him in verse 31, and they said, should he deal with our sister as with an harlot? Simeon and Levi did have a point in their argument. Jacob did not seem to be concerned for Dinah and did not seem to be concerned with the immorality that had been committed. Which brings us to this point. And really, this is where the message is. The sons of Jacob were concerned with retaliation. The wicked of the city were rejoicing over this whole matter. And Jacob, the patriarch, was resentful about the whole thing. And we ask ourselves this question, where are the mourners? I want you to go with me to Matthew chapter 5. In Matthew chapter 5, as Jesus Christ begins the Sermon on the Mount, He begins with what we call the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes are the attitudes that must be found in us. And as he's teaching the disciples, he begins with the first two Beatitudes, which are foundational to the rest of the sermon. And he says in verse 3 of Matthew 5, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And then in verse 4 he says, "Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted." Now the word mourn means basically to lament, to bewail, to be sad, to be sorrowful. Of the word that you find throughout the New Testament used when it speaks of grief, the strongest word that is used in the New Testament is the word mourn. And when dealing with the Beatitudes, we are not dealing here with the physical world, but rather with the spiritual realm. We are not speaking of mourning over financial loss, or the loss of a friend, or a family member, or a broken object. This mourning is caused by sin. It is the sorrow over our sin. It is also the sorrow over sin of society and sin in general. It is the sorrow that is caused by a lack of righteousness. It has to do with our attitude about sin. What is important to the Lord is our attitude towards sin and how we react to sin. So there's the options that we find here. Either we can try to retaliate against sin, we can try to rejoice over sin, or we can just resent sin. But the Lord wants us to mourn over sin. Isaiah chapter 57, Isaiah speaks in verse 15. He says, "For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place with him also that is of the contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. For I will not contend forever, neither will I be always wroth. For the spirit should fail before me and the souls which I have made. For the iniquity of his covetousness was I wroth and smote him. I hid me and I was wroth, and he went on forwardly in the way of his heart. I have seen his ways and I will heal him. I will heal him also and restore comforts unto him and to his mourners. I create the fruit of the lips, peace, peace to him that is far off, and to him that is near, saith the Lord, and I will heal him. But the wicked are like the troubled sea, when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mine and dirt. There is no peace, saith my God, to the wicked." And so what was he calling the people of Israel? He was calling them to come back to a contrite heart. He wanted mourners in Israel again. He wanted people to be broken over sin, their own sin, and the sin of those around him. That's what he wanted of them. Jesus Christ was also a man of sorrow. Isaiah 53:3 tells us he was a man of sorrow and acquainted with grief. Our Lord Jesus Christ had no sin, but he did mourn for the sins of men. You find them in Matthew 23, verse 37. "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets and stonest them that are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as an hen gathered her chicks under her wings, and ye would not." You see, we are not speaking just about mourning over our own sin. We are also over the sin which is prevalent in our society. In Psalm 34, verse 18, the Bible says, "The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit." We know that David had a broken heart after he was confronted with his sin. You know, the conflict that we are dealing with today is with holiness and righteousness. You see, the world does not deal with sin very well. Jacob's sons did not deal with sin very well. The wicked, obviously, did not deal with sin very well. But neither did Jacob deal with sin very well. You see, the world will often deny sin and say that it's not sin. They point the finger or blame somebody else because of sin, or often they ignore it because they don't care about it, and they'll say something like, "Well, no one is perfect." You see, it is never okay with God that we sin. Our sin does not catch God off guard. God is not surprised when we sin. Christ knew the disciples would sin, but here He instructs them. He says, blessed are they that mourn. One commentator put it this way. He says, the world would and does regard a statement like this as utterly ridiculous. The one thing the world tries to shun is mourning. Its whole organization is based on the supposition that mourning is something to avoid. The philosophy of the world is forget your troubles, turn your back upon them, do everything you can not to face them. Things are bad enough as they are without you going to look for troubles. Say to the world, says the world, therefore be as happy as you can. The whole organization of life, the pleasure mania, the money, the energy and enthusiasm that are expected, that are expended in entertaining people, are all just an expression of the great I am of the world to get away from the idea of mourning and having the spirit of mourning. You see, we must keep a clear view of God. The reason why we do not see sin as we ought is because we have a pathetic and an unbiblical view of God. The greater our view of God is, the more devastating the view of sin in our lives will become. When our view of God changes, then our view of sin changes. And then how we deal with sin changes. Isaiah in Isaiah 6 had a clear vision of God. And what did he say? As he saw God high and lifted up, he said, holy, holy, holy. What did he say? He says, I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. You see, Isaiah did not retaliate to sin. He did not rejoice in sin. He did not resent sin. He mourned over sin. And the people of God must have the same spirit within them. You see, the world knows nothing about what it means to mourn. But the Bible also tells us in this beatitude, Jesus Christ says, blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Levi and Simeon would have a curse upon them because of what they did. Because they retaliated instead of mourning over sin. The people of Shechem were destroyed because they rejoiced and they didn't mourn over sin. And Jacob became fearful because he resented sin and didn't mourn over sin. You see, without mourning, there is no comfort. The people who are going to be comforted are the people who mourn. The emphatic Greek noun, otoi, means they alone there. Blessed are they that mourn, and those only that mourn. They only shall be comforted. It is only those who mourn who need to be comforted. It is only they who ever get to know what it means to be comforted. Psalm 30 verse 5 says, weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. Psalm 126 5 says, they that sow in tears shall reap in joy. 2 Corinthians 6:10 says, as sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. You see, the world says, those don't go together. You can't be sorrowful and then rejoice. But Jesus Christ says, yes. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Those that sorrow, they are the ones that shall rejoice. And so we go back to Genesis 34, and we ask this question, where are the mourners? You know, that's what Jesus Christ is seeking for today. He's seeking for a people who will be mourners over sin. You know, there are several ways that we can react in this world. Someone does something to us, sins against us, and we can retaliate. But a better thing to do is to mourn over that sin. Some people in the world rejoice over sin. But what we ought to do when we see the world rejoicing over sin is we ought to mourn for the world. And instead of resenting sin and its consequences, we should mourn. You see, often people get upset when they're caught in sin, and they're upset because they got caught. Not because they see it as sin against the Holy God. And so as we look here We find in Genesis 34 a perfect illustration of what we should not be in this world. When we look at the wickedness in the world, we can be all upset about it. We can all get all up in arms, but may the Lord help us to be a people who mourn over our sin, who mourn over the sin of the world. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. We do not condone sin, but we are comforted when we mourn over sin. And may the Lord help us. Let's bow our heads for a word of prayer.